And we're live. We're not live.
Ooh, I just hit my sound booth here a little bit on accidente.
Your garbage heap?
My trash mountain?
Trash mountain. Big Rock Candy Mountain?
Oh, God. No, I can't.
Okay, I won't do it. It's fine.
You can. No, I mean, you can.
In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the cops have wooden legs, and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth, and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit, and the barns are full of hay. Well, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, there ain't no wind, the wind... I can't remember...
Whatever.
In the Big Rock Candy Mountain. You just go listen to it.
I just want to say, what do you mean you can't remember? It's you've sung that song for years. You only do it in that voice.
It's that's
and you
the voice.
Oddly know a stressful amount of words to this song I've never heard other than you singing it in that voice.
It's in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And then it's like also in a couple of old creepy things. I don't press me on old creepy.
All right, I don't remember, but speaking of old creepy, also welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome!
So we could say you're a numerologist, if you will. And that's addiction.
Like 4x dick. Like, it's like four times as large as usual.
Like, how does your navel get like that?
Right.
That's disgusting.
How, though?
I wouldn't want to live in Amish country permanently, but I would visit as a booty call.
I was so distracted by sexy mystery, fuck.
It's totally fine. You said sexy mystery, and you were like, this one time?
Please enjoy the music while your party is reached. I'm going to peak in high school and then die.
Welcome to Why Are You Like This, the weekly podcast where we talk about and sing old creepies and try and dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, et cetera, in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That's Jamie Ryan singing the old creepies in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams in Chicago.
Hi.
Welcome. So happy that you're here tonight. You're not here.
You know, happy that we're here together, live, not live. This isn't live.
This is live for us.
This is live as hell for us, yes. Shit's just rolling in. Whew.
So what not live are we talking about tonight?
Well, the not live we're talking about tonight is one of many horse-related idioms.
Oh no. We are, no.
Well, I mean, you could probably think of a few of these off the top. Hold your horses. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Horseplay, a horse of a different color. Beating a dead horse. Eating like a horse. Getting off your high horse. A dark
What's
horse.
What's truly amazing is I couldn't think of any of these.
One horse were. Town. Charlie horse.
Oh my God.
Or chomping at the bit.
Pee like a racehorse.
Pee like a racehorse. Yeah, I feel like that's... I don't even know if that's a thing other people say, but I say that all the time.
That is a thing. And they pee real hard before they race.
Oh, sure enough, they do. But we're not talking about any of those horse-related idioms tonight, today, morning, whenever you're listening. We're talking about getting back on the horse.
This is a scarier one.
I mean, I think so. Because... back on the horse implies that you got bucked off or failed.
Exactly. You were once previously on, but for some reason you're not right now.
That's right. So, I mean, what are your, what comes to mind? What are your initial thoughts when you hear someone say, oh, like, you gotta get back on the horse?
To be honest, like, inappropriately, like, I first think of a dick, and I know that that's just...
yes!
You know, like, after a divorce, I don't know, there's a lot of, like, TV shows for older women where I feel like the advice is really to get back on it, you know?
I feel that. I hear what you're saying.
And older ladies, if that's what you want to do, or younger ladies, you know, go for it.
That's right.
Get back on the proverbial horse. But no, aside from that, it kind of just instills like a little bit of like panic and shame in me, I think. I don't know. I was thinking about this a lot this week because I knew obviously
that spoiler alert that like I would we would have to talk about this because I knew the
right
fucking topic. But no, I found myself like kind of stressed out by the concept because I think getting back on the horse for me, the first thing that I thought of was like that I still in me have like a desire to like play music. And that's like not probably at this point in my life something that ever will be like my income or like my main focus, but it's something that I have like a lot of shame about kind of dropping. And so like getting back on the horse, like in that feels like so complicated and feels like really like I got bucked off and like I'm unhappy about it. And so some of that's framing, but I don't know. So that's what I think of. I also think of like when I was a little kid and like learning how to fucking play softball because I was a baby lesbian.
I love you so much.
And just once the coach threw a pitch to me during a game because the coaches pitch when you're little and it hit me.
That's right. They do.
Yep. It hit me just right exactly in the eye. And
oh no. Oh my God. Was your eye open? Was it scratched?
It was like my I had like a big bruise like on my like I had a black eye.
Oh, sweet baby. How old were you?
I was in third grade because it was softball. Aww. And I had that year I had to switch to softball from baseball because they wouldn't let me. Anyway, this story is getting away from me, so I'm just gonna say
but real brief pause though. The story is getting away from you. But didn't you play on a baseball team because you like pretended to be a boy?
Didn't I think you're thinking of Amanda Bynes and She's the Man.
But wait, why do I think that you played baseball with the boys?
Because my friend and I, who I won't name, but she's great, in elementary school, we wanted to play baseball with like all of our friends who used to be on our baseball team. Because like in kindergarten and first grade, we played t-ball. And it's like we played with the boys. And just like not very many girls wanted to play t-ball. So like there wasn't girls' team. And then in third grade... in second grade, they split you apart and there's boys like baseball and there's girls softball. And we were like, basically felt like we were just getting kicked off of our team. Because like all the other boys that we played with were like other boys. All the boys that we played with were.
When you were a little boy. Yes. Yeah, keep going.
All the boys that we played with were on the same team together and just we couldn't be on it anymore. And so we like marched down to the office and demanded different sign up forms so that they would let us be on the team again. And they did.
Oh, that's dope. See, I knew you played baseball with the boys. You didn't disguise yourself. I did confuse you probably with an Amanda Bynes storyline for a minute. It was somewhere buried in my memory. See, you did. You did play baseball with the boys.
I did. So why I was talking about getting back on the horse was when I got hit in the face, when I was playing softball, that moment of like really just like wanting to cry and turning around and being like, I'm maybe going to sit the rest of the game out. Instead of doing that, like just going ahead and like batting anyway. I don't know. It's like the only like non-shameful example I can think of right now. And it did lead me to talk about playing baseball. So now I feel strangely vulnerable and like I've misrepresented myself.
Oh God, this is my favorite. Also, while you were summing that up and feeling misrepresented, which you totally weren't, there was a nugget here because you went to a different grade school within our elementary school like district, and boys who I went to grade school with like in the early years, because you joined our grade school circa like third grade, guys who they played you in baseball in like second and they thought you were a boy.
Yes, that did happen.
That is what I'm thinking of. Okay, anyway, because you played baseball with all the boys.
Yes, that's right.
And so the boys that I was homies with, because I was like a soccer kid. Anyway, blah, 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 baseball. Good. I'm glad we're talking some shameful stories, because shame is actually a word that's definitely going to come up. And I have some absolutely shameful anecdotes I'd like to share with you tonight, because I feel like getting back on the horse does live in an area of shame.
Yeah.
And also to say, I think we're going to be revisiting fear, a topic we've covered before a little bit. But this time, we're not talking what it feels like so much to be afraid of the unknown, or specifically the dark and things that go bump in the night, as much as we were last time. But this time we're really talking about more of a fear of failure.
Yeah.
I know. It's kind
and
of
like
it's
opening kind of, previous failure.
Yeah, exactly. Because in like the short run, okay, you think about fear of failure, it influences the types of goals you pursue, right?
Oh,
and the
for
kinds
sure.
of strategies you're going to use to achieve them, and the level of standards you're going to set as indicators of success.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So when you choose your goals to pursue, if you have a higher dose of fear of failure, you're going to tend to focus your efforts more on preventing losses than achieving gains.
Ugh. Ugh. This is just a knife in my chest, but and also a light unto my path, you know?
Right. I mean, a little bit, you know? And so if we're talking getting back on the horse, it is indicative, like we said, of like you've already failed.
Yeah.
Like there has been some kind of failure that's already happened. And so to the point of trying to prevent loss, I almost, when I was thinking about this, thought to myself, and I wonder if you agree, it almost feels to me less scary in some ways to let go, like balls out and do something I've never done before, than to try and do something that I haven't succeeded at in the past.
And I would actually say to that point, like, yes, I agree with you. And I have wondered before if, like, quote, beginner's luck is actually just the confidence of knowing that you won't be judged for your first performance at something.
I think that does happen a lot. And it got me thinking just kind of, I don't know, fear of failure in general, because part of me feels like, okay, it's less scary to put yourself out there if you are, like you said, kind of maybe giving yourself the grace to be like, oh, whatever, I've never done this before. Yeah. Like, who cares? And some things that's easier to do, like, if you're playing, I don't know, some very low stakes game, like if you're going to play
badminton.
Darts with somebody and then you like kill it and it's like, oh, I'm great at this. But you weren't worried about being great at it necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's maybe a little different than like having to do like some sort of public speaking engagement that like that might feel scarier or bigger, even if it's not something you usually do.
Yeah.
Or
something dangerous,
know.
Like tightrope walking. That's more stressful on your first go.
Yeah, something that, well, I mean, and that feels like we're moving outside of fear of failure. Into
true,
like
that
an actual
is
like
different.
Life
Excuse me.
Fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know. But I also kind of thought a little bit about just how, quote unquote, getting back on the horse could feel like a positive and maybe still a negative.
Yeah.
But like getting back on the horse, quote unquote, I think oftentimes feels easier the less time has passed between like one failed attempt and another.
Agree.
Yeah. I feel
well, you just
like,
get rusty. Like you just, I don't know. Distance can be helpful from a failure. Like having some time away from failure can be helpful, but it's really easy to just like lock up those failure feelings like in a cupboard and only revisit them when you're trying to do that task, activity, skill, hobby, etc. again.
Oh, I like kind of to your point, that ability to jump back onto it like could be exciting, because like the positive way, or the way I feel like it's played out positively in my life before, is I've been like, okay, I fucked this up, but now I've replayed it in my head 20 times and I know what I should have done and what I could have done and how it would go better.
Mm-hmm. No, and so absolutely. And that like in like making artwork, like in school and like later after school, like that's absolutely true. Like in ceramics, like I would make a sculpture, like one time I made a huge sculpture 5 times because like it just kept something different would fuck up every time, and so like it just took that many times to troubleshoot it. And so like if more time had passed between those attempts, no, I never would have done it.
Yeah, I probably would have. It would have felt more impossible, and some of that's kind of how we build it up in our heads, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how big of a monster does it become?
Right. And so I think for me, I guess why I oftentimes feel like the less amount of time that's passed, it feels easier because I haven't built the fear up as much in my head.
For sure.
But then also sometimes like I fuck up at things and I'm like, ooh, I need a minute away from this to like gather my ego and whatever again.
Gather my ego. You're right. I was actually.
To come back to it.
Yeah. And I'm curious if it's really anything, like if there was no ego involved in like a getting back on the horse situation, if it would be shameful. And we don't need to quantify that, but it's just something to wonder about.
No, definitely. And I think how like the things you brought up in terms of getting back on the horse for you, I was thinking about some things in my life. And I feel like one of them being for me, like at different points, dating, like when you've been in a relationship and then it is like, I mean, to your point, I mean, getting back on the
on that
literal
dick.
Horse,
I'm
you
sorry.
Know?
I'm so sorry that I mean, said that like that. It was gross. It is not Daytona Beach in the 80s. Go on.
Well, listen. That said, Daytona 500 forever. And I have been in situations where, like, for me, the more time I've spent away from dating, then the scarier it, like, is when I get back into it. But also some of that, when I was evaluating this, I kind of thought, I was like, oh, you know, it's, some of it has to do with, like, how I left the situation. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I'd been in, like, a, you know, a couple-year relationship, and then I moved to Chicago, and then when I had, like, kind of gotten my roots and felt more settled, I was like, okay, I feel like I really want to go on some dates. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. when I was doing that, like, the first time I went out with somebody, I was, like, so nervous about it. Like, I felt like I was going to puke the entire day I was at my job.
Yeah.
And I'll say I'm somebody who gets very, like, physically anxious, like, uh-huh. like, my body feels not good ways when I'm nervous yeah. about something. Yeah. I have great neuropathy problems in my hands. Thank you, chemotherapy, that really flare up in anxiety. And it's just like it's a real stressor when you can't feel your fingers. But that's another story yeah. for another time. But I definitely felt that when I was like first like going on a couple dates. And then it got so much easier just because I was like, oh, yeah, like I totally know how to do this. All of it's been fine. Like I didn't have any bad experiences in terms of feeling like, oh, Austin, like you are a big dummy or like you fucked this up. You know what I mean? I definitely went out with people that I was like, who the fuck is this jack off?
Yeah.
But yeah. I never felt like ashamed of how I handled myself. And so as somebody who, I mean, truthfully right now in this little pocket, like I'm not really dating. I'm not super bothered by not the act of dating because it just doesn't really sound fun right now.
Yeah. It's also
I'd love some
like,
good companionship,
really
but it sounds exhausting. Yeah, dating, like, it's not calling to me right now.
Yeah. I take that back. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes.
Sometimes it's fun with the right person, you know? Yeah. I don't know. But you really have to find some toads before you find somebody okay.
For sure.
It's just like the lay of the land. But anyway, that to say, I feel like where I'm at now, I've checked out of dating in maybe, I guess what I could say, like a more conscious way. Mm-hmm. And maybe because I already had like a get back on the horse moment recently, or because I feel like this time away from doing that is very chosen.
Yeah.
That it doesn't feel so scary to me. And to do it again doesn't necessarily... I might say, you know, I'm getting back on the horse, but it doesn't have the fear of failure necessarily associated with it.
Well, and also, and I don't know why I haven't thought of this until right now in this discussion, but getting back on the horse, like, doesn't necessarily imply that you fell off or were thrown. Like, you could have gotten off by choice.
Exactly. And I think there's less fear of failure when you do get off by choice. And I definitely came to that thought when I was thinking about this and, you know, doing a little research, that I was like, yeah, you know, when I've chosen to gracefully dismount, it's not such a bother to be like, yeah, I'll get back in the saddle one of these days.
Well, in the same way that we like kind of bookmark like our relationships with people, like we kind of tend to just like pick up wherever we left off. I think that we can also like kind of like treat our hobbies, activities, like whatever pursuits that maybe we would deem like the horse that we're getting back on. Like, sure. I think it's also possible that we like bookmark our feelings about those things. So if you came out of a long-term relationship and had like negative feelings about that and then had like a hiatus from dating, of course, like when you quote get back on the horse, like you're going to have like those feelings of the previous relationship, like probably a little bit left over in just even the idea of dating, because it's your most recent example.
Absolutely.
Whereas I think once you've been on a couple dates that are like, even if they're bullshit and they don't go well, at least they kind of like wash your date idea.
They cleanse your palate.
Yeah. And then you're like, yeah, I'll go on another one. Whatever. This isn't a big deal.
Yeah, and just I think sometimes with getting back on the horse, you know, in general, whatever it is, just having that reminder of like, I did this thing and like, it wasn't the end of the world and I didn't die and like, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
And like, was the horse fun? And was it cool that you could ride it? Like... You know what I mean? Like, even if you fuck something up and get, like, quote, thrown from the horse, like, if you have, like, like a sculpture that breaks or, like, an album that fails or, like, whatever, like, there's probably some part of doing that that you loved. So, I don't know.
Fierce. There's something to that. And I don't know. I've been listening to some other folks have conversations about this and talking about this with other people in my life lately. But there is something to be said for... Do you enjoy the outcome or do you enjoy the process? I definitely think that ties into, being afraid to fail or not. And if you enjoy the process of whatever it is, then probably the fear of failure is less because, to your point, you can look back and say, hey, but like I enjoyed this even if this thing isn't totally right, or I have to do this over, or my end product isn't what I wanted it to be because it was a process and I enjoyed the process. And if your goal is always the final product, well...
That changes your idea of success, whether you value like the process or the product, or like some hybrid of the two, hopefully. Or maybe not hopefully. I think it's fully fine to like just value the process, but... Sorry, that's just a very interesting point.
No, absolutely. I kind of thought about that lately, and I guess I'm trying to, in a lot of areas of my life right now, maybe enjoy the process.
Yeah, me too. I'm having a really hard time living in the moment, but, you know,
it can be tough sometimes for whatever your project is, and it's really easy to feel like I'll be happy when. And that's a whole nother episode, but I am trying to, I don't know, enjoy the process of things in my life a little bit more now, not just striving to have it, quote unquote, all figured out or be doing it right or have whatever the success is.
Because I hope that when I, quote, have it all figured out, that like I'm still
there'll be a new problem.
I'm still going to be like plotting and scheming, and like my brain's never going to be a different brain. It's not going to stop trying to improve things. So like I'm always going to feel that way. So you just have to like, I don't know. I'm trying to chill out and enjoy it, but I don't mean to talk over you. I'm sorry.
No, you're not. It is hard to chill out and enjoy things sometimes.
Yeah.
For sure. But I wanted to kind of break down what are the consequences of failing that scare us enough to prevent us from trying. Via our friends at Psychology Today, because, you know,
thanks,
why the hell
guys.
Not?
Yeah.
Always. We love you. We love Wikipedia. This is where we live. So we already kind of touched on the first one, but failing is embarrassing.
Most definitely.
Yeah. So no one's proud of failing, and... people, like, it's an awkward conversation. You don't congratulate each other when you don't achieve your goals, i.e. whether it's, like, graduating or getting the promotion or losing the 5 pounds you're trying to lose or, like, whatever the fuck it is. Mm-hmm. And for me, in embarrassing, this reminded me of a particular kind of goofy thing.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not a particularly secretive person. I would say, like...
No, you're really not.
I'm not. I wouldn't call myself like secretive or sneaky. I can be private about some things, and I can be really open about some things. But I would say generally, I'm not sneaky. Mm-hmm. So that said, in times of trying things in which I could fuck up, I have been sneaky about them.
Uh huh.
In that, like, I'll be working on things or doing things, and I won't want to tell anybody what's going on because I don't want anyone to know if it goes wrong. Mm-hmm.
I do the same thing because I'm worried that I won't, like, have follow through. And then I'm like, well, then if I don't tell anyone I was working on it, then they won't know I didn't do what I said I would do.
Well, the flip side of that is you could be, like, asking for accountability.
It's all a maturity process.
You know, we're all growing. But when I was in high school, in Ohio, you can get your temporary license, like your learner's permit at like 15 and a half, right? And then you can get your license at 16. And I didn't even get my temps until I was 16 because I just like didn't give a fuck and all my friends were older than me and drove. So it like really didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
I just really wasn't concerned by it.
And driver's ed is, like, time-consuming. And, like, some other time I'll tell you about how I got kicked out, but that's a different night. Go ahead.
That's a whole nother episode. But when I ultimately, I guess I got my driver's license, like, right after I turned 17.
Uh-huh.
So I did it, like, a year later than a lot of homies, but also most of my friends were already older than me because I had a lot of friends who were a year above me in school and then also I was a baby for my grade. So I was kind of like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it when I was 17, so summer after my junior year of high school. And when I was doing this, I didn't tell anyone the first time I took it.
Mm-hmm.
And I failed. Totally failed. Listen, if you've ever taken a fucking driving test in Ohio, you've done maneuverability. If you haven't had to do maneuverability because you're in one of those easy, cushy states where the driving test is way chiller, just Google it. It's like, it's a way. Listen, if I had to do maneuverability now as someone who drives very confidently and can parallel park like a car in a city like a mofo, I still think I would hit the cones.
I agree, actually, because they tried to act like maneuverability was, like, easier than parallel parking. It's not applicable.
Nope.
It is
certainly not.
Not applicable. And, like, yes, you're right. I parallel park all the fucking time, but I don't think I could do maneuverability.
I don't think I could do it. Anyway, so I failed the maneuverability portion. It's not a maneuver
you ever do.
It's not. It's not a thing that people do in cars. So I failed on it, got in the car with my mom and I was like, I cried. And then I was like, take me to Dairy Queen.
I was going
to
say, did you get Dairy Queen?
Oh, fuck yeah, man. That's how I ease my pain. And so we went to Dairy Queen and then I said to my mom, I was like, don't tell anyone about this. And my mom was like, no problem. And then I was like, you can take it. I think you have to wait like 2 weeks or something. And then you can take it again.
Yeah.
And so I just like rescheduled and then I practiced a little bit more. And I remember my boyfriend at the time was like, hey, when are you ever going to take your fucking driver's test? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. Like, maybe I'll just, like, tell you when I tell you. And he was like, you're being so weird. He was like, why won't you fucking tell me?
Yeah.
And he was like, wait, like, what is your problem? And he was, like, just, like, very, like, irritated by it. But then the fact that he was irritated by it irritated me more. Of it was, like, a whole thing.
Yes.
Obviously. But he was like, fucking just tell me. Like, why won't you tell me you're so weird? And then I just remember, like, we were, like, I feel like high school scream fighting. And I was like, because I already failed it. It was, like, a whole thing. And he was just like, oh, well, damn. But I just, that fear of failing and that fear of getting back on, I wasn't going to tell anybody when I was taking the second one. I was just someday going to be like, hey, guys, I have my driver's license.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to tell you because I don't want the embarrassment or the shame of telling you, oh, hey, that test I was supposed to take, yeah, totally failed.
Right, because then you protect yourself from sharing anything other than success.
Yeah. So that one is a big one for me. And I think
that's a really good example, yeah, of the shame that, yeah.
It is shameful. And I think, like, for me, and I'll own this, and this is not a part of me that I'm proud of, but, you know, I think I'm worried, like, more than most people I'm like constantly worried that people don't like me. Mm-hmm. And fear of like public opinion of like my failures or shortcomings. It's really like a real big trigger for not wanting to do it. Cause I don't want to have other people see me fail. I can watch myself fail repeatedly. And that is not stressful to me. Like for me to mess things up in like a space by myself repeatedly, fine.
Yeah.
Very hard time with public failure.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that like some of that comes down to like, unfortunately for me, like I think overvaluing like public opinion slash like perception, which can be really,
totally.
Really, really inhibiting and can be really
it can be super inhibiting.
Yeah. And especially when you're trying to do something that maybe like people who you know, like friends, family, acquaintances, like people from high school that you're Facebook friends with, like see you like trying something again that like they know you used to do, sometimes just like raises uncomfortable questions. And if you are getting back on the horse, so to speak, like I think that like you have to be prepared to like answer those questions. I don't know. Like if I like start making a lot of artwork again, like I think I need to be prepared to like for people to be like, hey, why did you stop doing this? And because that's totally
that's
real,
hard.
Like valid question, but like it's not my favorite question to answer.
No, I don't think it's most people's favorite question to answer of like why you stop doing something and then why you decide to start again, because it is deeply personal and can be embarrassing.
Yeah. And I don't know. I also like everyone doesn't have a sensitivity about those things. Like I think I probably wouldn't ask someone why they stopped making artwork for 3 years and then like started it again.
Sure.
Because often the answer is usually something like illness or a strange life circumstance or like a divorce or like a weird family situation. You know what I mean? It's usually
things
like,
that feel like none of your business.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. I feel that really hard, truthfully.
Yeah. But also maybe you just took a fucking break and that's fine too.
And that's totally fine too. So then the next one they kind of touched on in this article is they say failing means I don't have what it takes. Success for a lot of folks is intertwined with your like sense of self-worth.
Jesus Christ, yes.
So it's a form of validation that you have what it takes, and failure then is like also like a shitty measure of who you are.
And I think for me, like fear of like getting back on the horse is like directly tied to that, like I often find that like if I fail like again or like repeatedly fail publicly, that like that confirms that I do not have value. And so like even the act of attempting is like terrifying, because it's like, well, I might be like putting a nail in the coffin of like the possibility that I'm a valuable person. But like if I never try at all, then there's like we never know. Like that could have been fine. Like could have been great.
I could be great. You'll
have
just
to never know.
Make your own assumptions.
Yeah. You can't prove
that's
that I'm
tough,
not.
That's tough though.
It is really inhibiting. Yes. I'm trying to get over it.
And I'll be honest, I feel like I think maybe I'm somebody who I don't know, like, I think maybe I'm more embarrassed than you. Maybe it feels like we have that on equal playing field. But I think definitely you have more of this one than I do.
The second? Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. In terms of, like, don't have what it takes, is this my value? But the next one, I feel like this one really resonated with me. I'd be curious to hear what you think. But failing means I'm stuck.
Oh.
So sometimes I
get in a hole about that. I'm curious about that. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes the reason we so fervently and like desperately set goals is so we can control our future.
Or why we don't set any goals at all.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, success means you can, you know, shape your future the way you want it, right?
Yeah.
But failure makes future uncertain. What happens if I fail? What if, you know, my plans don't come through? And then how do you manage those losses? Will I ever create the life I want? Mm-hmm. And I'm somebody who is like a really big planner. Like I'm always trying to, I guess, achieve the next thing. I think anybody who knows me like long time and like looks at the way I do life
long time.
love me long time, you know. Would say that though, and
yeah, for sure.
I think
part
for
of why
me,
I like you being my podcast buddy.
Oh, thanks. I mean, it's something that I definitely feel like. I definitely feel there, and for me, when I was really ready to get out of retail in like a career pathway, I was like ready to see how the other half lived on a 9-to-5 kind of schedule, and it wasn't an easy pivot. It was hard to get anybody outside of, like, everybody who owned a fucking retail store wanted to hire me. So I had worked for a lot of people, like, a lot of brands that people were like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had done things and, like, was, I think, generally good at my job.
Uh-huh.
But I was also miserable. And so that made me probably bad at my job sometimes in an attitude capacity. But that's a whole nother episode. That said, I definitely felt super stuck when I was trying to get out of the, I felt like, oh, I've pigeonholed myself into this one job and I can't get out of it. And it definitely made me like, am I stuck? Like, I'm like,
yeah,
if I fail to get a different gig in some kind of other area, like, what's gonna happen? And like, will I ever have the kind of life that I want?
Totally. I mean, I have that fear about, like, service industry. And, like, yes, I have other skills and things, but they're not, like, at present enough to support me. So, like, I have, yeah, like, a lot of fears about being stuck, like, doing some kind of service industry thing for forever. Even though I know I'm, like, fully capable of, like, doing whatever I'd like to do, but it's just about like making sure that like I have the balls to actually try.
I mean, I guess that goes back to like, you know, well, kind of what you started to allude to, but sometimes we set low goals because we know we'll make them, and it can be scary to like set the big ones. And it was hard for me to be like, okay, I'm gonna get out of this and I'm not gonna do this anymore. And that was scary because just going to a different gig was so easy.
Yeah.
And truthfully, the last store I managed, I took that job while I was trying to find a job outside of retail. And I think it's part of the reason I hated it so much. And I mean, amongst many other things, but I don't know. It was definitely like, I felt that very hard. And I was like, oh, I can't make this other thing happen. Well, I have to get out of the circumstance I'm in. And so then I took something again that was like a promotion and like whatever. But it was like, it felt to me like more of the same. And I was like, I'm fucking
stuck.
Well,
it wasn't what you wanted. Yeah. So like, that's never going to feel good. Even if like to other people that looks good.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's hard. It is. Hmm. The next one they mention, failing means I'll become irrelevant.
Oh.
That was an interesting one to me. And kind of wrapped up in like society's obsession with success and successful people.
Yeah.
It's almost like that implicit fear of like, quote unquote, what do we want to say? Like failure is like social suicide.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So like if you fail, people will lose interest in you and eventually forget about you. If you're not a winner, then they're no longer going to be willing to help you or work with you. And you worry that maybe failing means losing the opportunity to increase anything, your career path, your social influence, your wealth, your whatever you're after, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me, like, that kind of felt a lot like some themes we touched on in Peaking.
Most definitely. I was just thinking about that too.
Yeah, that, you know, you hit this point, but then you've, like, no longer got it.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know. Do you feel that one anywhere in your life? Do you worry about, like, relevancy or, like, people, like, no longer thinking you've got enough to be worth investing in? I personally don't so much. Not now, at least.
I don't super worry about relevancy. Mostly for me, it's, I don't know, like, the first two that we talked about are, like, the biggest ones. Like, embarrassment and then, like, my value being tied to, like, my ability to succeed at whatever I'm currently trying to do. But no, I don't. Relevancy, I don't know. That's so like tied up in like fame ideas, at least like initially when you said it.
Yeah, it does kind of feel that way. And it read that way, I felt like, when I dug into it.
But I also think that maybe that's important to notice, because like for some people, like fame, even not necessarily like grand scale,
maybe just
fame,
notoriety,
like,
even.
Yeah, notoriety, or even like clout at your workplace, or like whatever relevancy means for you. If it means that like your family talks about you for generations after you're dead, like that could be
something.
That's
a really good framework to put it in.
Yeah, because it could be relevancy with loved ones, not just with like people who you don't know.
Or your friends. Like if you're that kind of person that you feel like, am I relevant like in the way that like people want to keep inviting me to do things, that I'm still invited to come around and be a part of that. In that way, I can definitely and maybe feel that fear a little bit.
I feel
bit harder.
That actually, now that we're framing it like that,
about loved ones. Yeah,
loved ones, or even just maybe like friends from college who like went on to pursue like very, very like high degrees, or just maybe are in a field that like is so different from my life. Sometimes I worry when I like see them from time to time, like I wonder if I am like interesting enough, or like if I'm too different, or if like my like how different my lifestyle is, like if something about the way I live, like because it's so different from them and it's like I'm like less educated, I wonder if like that will make me kind of irrelevant in their life, like and to some degree like that is true, because like I don't know, if you like go be a doctor, like you're probably gonna make other doctor friends because you work together all the time and you have the same schedule, so like your friend who's a bartender might be irrelevant, but it's not like because I'm a bartender that I'm irrelevant.
Yeah,
but well, I do honest. Think about that a lot. Yeah
Well, and that's something like very 20s, 30s of us, but like everybody doing really different things, and how certain people feel, I don't know, maybe just quote unquote more relevant to your life because you're in similar stages. And I probably do worry about this in a relationship kind of sphere as someone who remains uncoupled. The more people pair off, move in, get married, the more I'm like, oh, like, am I gonna be that like weird single friend like at Christmas? Like, what's that gonna be like?
I mean, like, I really don't think that you will be, but I also fully understand
it
that
feels
fear.
Very real to me, but that's kind of you to say.
No, absolutely, I get it. And like I think that for most of my life, like I like always made the assumption that that was my future, and I like, I don't know, there are times where I was okay with it and times where I was not, and sometimes I still think about it and I'm like, what if, you know, that is my life. And it, I don't know, it's a shitty thing to think about, but yeah, I believed for a long time that I was going to be like that single forever aunt. But also,
isn't
like there's nothing wrong with that.
There is nothing wrong with that. And isn't it funny how we either we put it on ourselves, or we feel like other people put it on us, that the relationships we've had romantically or not, or like where we are romantically or not at any present moment, somehow defines failure or success, because I really don't think it does at the core of my being, but it often feels that way, even though I don't think that I believe that.
Well, and when you say that, like, that's part of, like, being valued or success, I would just say, like, let's remember that, like, marriage, it, like, has been a goal, like, especially for women, for forever. So, like, if that's been like the marker of success, like there's so much leftover bullshit about like marriage being the end all be all in our culture, that like, yeah, of course there's that weird pressure and like we're going to feel that no matter what.
Sure we will. And I guess, you know, I mean, that's the other thing to keep in mind. I don't know whether it's your job or your relationship or your family or your whatever. I mean, one part does not a whole person make. So
yeah. No.
Nah. But we got two more of these.
All right, yeah, let's do them.
Yeah. So this one hits hard for me, but failing means letting people down. Mm. So the consequence of failing is that, you know, you impact others with your lack of success. And maybe you assume that failing to achieve your goal will leave important people in your life, family, employees, friends, whoever, disappointed. Now, that I feel very hard.
Not to be too meta about that, but that is why, like, at the beginning of podcasting, I was sometimes, like, maybe a little bit not super communicative all the time. And it's because I felt like I wasn't doing something well enough. And I was like, oh my God, I can't figure this out. And it's going to, like, also fuck everything up for Austin. And I just, like, I have to keep this a secret until I know that we can do it. And it, oh my God, that's the embarrassment thing.
I was going to say that takes me back to embarrassment, and I'll say in terms of being secretive, transparency on this podcast, we worked on this for ages before we told anybody what the fuck we were doing, and yeah, we told elaborate lies in a comedic way, for our own benefit at some points, about, like, what we were or weren't doing. I think at one point you tried to tell people I was making a pop album.
I made just fake album art. Like, we can release that on our Instagram.
We did make fake album art. We'll put that up for people. Don't worry. That will surface.
It is a really dramatic title. I can't remember. We'll post it.
It's really funny, but it was, like, a ruse because people were just like, you're clearly working very hard on something.
I was coming,
like,
to Chicago so much.
And people were like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And we were like, nothing.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Because we didn't want to tell people in case we never put it out, or, you know, we thought we sucked, or...
Yeah, if after two episodes we were like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't want to explain our exploration into podcasting if that's all it had been.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, that's the thing, is when you try on new things, it's a lot more comfortable to do that by yourself. And so,
it's,
yeah, like, secrecy
room
of letting people down.
I don't want to try it on in the middle of the store.
That's right. I mean, that's the thing. But so failing and letting people down, and then embarrassment, those two feel very, like, kindred to me. But also, I can think
also
of...
Also separate.
And so, like, somewhere that's, like, less embarrassment driven, but maybe more of, like, a disappointment front. I'm somebody who, like, gets depressed. And I think sometimes when other people, particularly my parents or, you know, those loved homies, or even friends sometimes, are really excited about what's going on in my life. And they're like, you're doing X, Y, and Z. This is great. And I'm the one who I feel like deflates the balloon and has to be like, you know what? Actually, like, I feel like really bad right now.
Aww, yeah.
And I'm not proud of, like, what I'm doing, or, you know, I don't feel like I have anything to show. And I'm feeling, like, very, like, lonely, yeah, down, whatever it is. I feel like a giant disappointment to the people who are, like, maybe like, wow, look at her go. And I'm like, actually, I'd like to, like, open up the curtain and tell you that I feel awful.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like a letdown, you
yeah
know?
Right. And with parents and grandparents too, there's something about like wanting to pretend to be happier than you are, so that you can preserve their happiness for you. Does that make sense?
Like, it does, and I will own that I'm very bad at pretending to be happier than I am. I'm, like, usually like, hi, I think that the world is ending.
Yeah.
And then I feel, like, a lot of guilt afterwards that I'm like, man, I really disappointed these people that I'm so unhappy.
I know. And I hate that. So it's...
Do you feel like you front more?
Most definitely. And I do find also that, like, there's for sure a balance. Like, there are, like, those people that I will tell, like, when the world is ending. But, like, also just kind of being a little pickier with, like, how transparent I am with everyone. And it's not necessarily about, like, fronting or lying, but rather just, like, choosing to maybe, like, spend a lot more energy focusing on, like, trying to be positive or, like, engaging with people around me.
Yeah.
it when I feel like maybe me saying like that I don't like feel very good like lately might like really suck all the energy from the room. And that's like a disappointment thing. Like I'm worried that like, yeah, if I like relax into how I'm feeling, that
other people will feel bad.
It will kill the vibe. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it does fucking kill the vibe. I've been known to be a vibe killer.
I can really, really be a vibe sucker. I mean, so, but I hate it. Yeah. And so that, but that's a tricky one because you don't want to just like lie, but also sometimes you have to.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I don't know if lying feels like the wrong word.
Omission.
Because also, you know, we don't share with everyone what we're feeling and thinking all the time. And
it's
I
not appropriate.
That's an obligation. Yeah. I don't need to tell, you know, people at work when I feel like trash. Like that's.
And I actually really dislike it when people at work tell me that. And I understand that like, yeah, like we're not supposed to do the like, hi, how are you? Good. How are you? Good. But like, if that's like how you say hi to people when you walk into work, then like, okay. But like, I don't know. Just when you're like, hey, like, how are you? What's up? I did this weekend. And they're like, oh my God. So, and then they like tell you a really dramatic thing about that. It's just, I don't know. You know what? Take us back. Bring me back.
Okay. I'll bring you back. There's definitely a lot there. And like, we don't have to tell everyone everything. And like, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. And it's not lying. And it is also real to feel self-conscious when you do tell people that you feel, you know, shitty or that stuff isn't going the way you wanted it to. Because, yeah, I mean, sometimes you do feel like you disappoint people. But that's also okay because, I don't know, not to get a too PBS special on us or anything. But, like, I don't know, people, when they really care about you, like, you know, care about you less, and maybe I'm saying this for my own benefit when you're full of shortcomings, so
hopefully
we all are.
Not
fuck it, we all fail all the time. That said, last one that Psychology Today gave us was that failing means I have a lot to lose. And I was like, okay, so from a practical point of view, failure translates into like actual losses, right? So if you're failing a class in school and you have to take it over, that could be like dollars, like lots of money per credits and time,
energy.
If your business is failing and you're not turning a profit, you could have wasted your savings, which you used to get it up off the ground. So those are like very tangible losses. Also time and effort, to your point. And if your pursuit doesn't, you know, yield results, you've wasted time and energy that you could have allocated to other things.
I feel like you also lose the feeling of potential. Like when you're like mid project or like mid anything, there's like the potential of how it will turn out. Like if you're making a movie and it's not done yet, then like it can be like as good as you can dream that it can be. But as soon as it's finished, it's only as good as it actually is. Does that land? Like,
yeah.
Like I think that in failing, like, yes, failure can be loss of, like, time, dollars, resources, but it's also the loss of, like, a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, so it makes sense, like, why we're all afraid to fail and how that prevents us from getting back on the proverbial horse or the literal horse to all you equestrians out there.
And you bestialities.
And, well, okay.
Zoophiles, my bad.
I can't. but I don't know. For as much as we can wax and wane poetically, and the way they broke it down on this article, some of these feel really different to me, and some of them feel really the same, and some of them feel like they just go hand in hand, and that's, you know, fine. And if you are to Google anything about getting over the horse or getting back on the horse. Getting over the horse, getting under the horse, getting ultimately on top of the horse.
Or behind the
horse. If you Google anything like that or you Google anything just about fear of failing, I mean, there's clickbait for days of, you know, 13 ways to conquer your fear of whatever. Aye. Like, try something again that you failed at. And there's a lot of that. I don't know. What are your own personal vibes of dealing with fear of failure? Do you like have a thing or a thing? Yeah. I don't know, a mantra perspective of how you deal with it, or you think you should deal with all these really negative things we just talked about?
I am like admittedly not amazing at dealing with the things that we just talked about. I feel like I have like a lot of ways that like my life has been inhibited by fear of like public failure or fear of like public perception. And so like that leads me to not take a full swing at a lot of things, which like looking back at my life is frustrating, but like all I can do is learn from it. So I feel like as far as methods to like counter that fear, I'm like really actively working on that now. But the most helpful thing has been just like reframing constantly, because like I can like analyze negatively and like negatively frame situations for myself to death. So I was like, I don't know. Finally, I'm getting in the habit of being like, okay, this thing that I'm afraid to do, if I'm say like, I'm afraid about maybe an episode that is going to air of this show, like rather than spiraling.
Which,
or
FYI, we do feel that way sometimes.
We do sometimes, like I've like had panic attacks about episodes that are going to come out because of like, usually because of like vulnerabilities that I've exposed, but
sure.
Yeah. But I have to like reframe everything and like try to just like ground myself in reality as opposed to like letting my fear really grip me. And so, okay, if I'm afraid about an episode that's coming out, like, okay, what am I actually afraid of? I'm afraid that people won't like it. I'm afraid that it'll be slow. I'm afraid that people will think that I'm boring while I'm crying. Okay, so those are the things that I'm afraid of.
Honest, dude. Fucking honest.
Yeah, and then dealing with them, like, honestly, like, I just, like, go down the list individually, and I counterpoint everything. And, like, that's the only way right now that I'm able to, like...
It's very analytical of you.
Because I'll analyze it negatively if I don't. So I almost feel like I have to, like, flip it and reverse it and, like, use that for good.
Put your thing down, flip it and reverse it.
You know.
See Elliot over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
I like that.
Yeah, but I feel that way about any creative pursuit. It's like if I – and I just have to constantly tell myself that, like, what I'm doing is valid and, like, my skill set matters and that, like, other people aren't, like, worlds better than me, that, like – every individual is interesting and unique. Just things like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, dude, that's not... I'm not mad at you on that front. That's fucking real. I think for me, I think what I'm trying to do to conquer the afraid to try things again... because I feel like I'm trying a lot of new things right now, which
yeah.
is cool. I feel like I've done a lot of really like new and different things in the last 2 years of my life, and I'm proud of that.
You really have. Yeah.
Thank you. But I'm also, you know, still embarrassed all the time about all sorts of dumb shit.
For sure.
And afraid to do or see, you know, do things again or see people again that I feel like I've embarrassed myself in front of. And I guess maybe what I'm trying to do to reframe the part of fear of trying things over again and the quote unquote getting back on the horse is maybe trying to lean into enjoying the process a little bit more.
Yeah, and that is, I didn't mention that, but thank you for saying that, because that's, like, hugely important. And it also, if you value the process, then, like, you do value yourself when you're in the process in a way that
yeah.
maybe I struggle with, because I'm, like, very results-focused. So that can be tough.
I think a lot of us are, and there's a lot of pressure to, quote-unquote, have it all. And
I'm over it, man.
I'm real fucking to over it. Yeah.
Unless having it all means I only work 10 hours a week, then I don't want all of it.
I don't think having it all is usually completely driven monetarily, but you know, not mm-hmm. the expression at least.
No.
And I don't think you can have it all. Anyway.
No. Unless you reframe what all of it is. But okay, enough.
Well, on that note of trying to cope with fear of failure and how we're trying to get back on the horses of our lives, both the proverbial horses and apparently all those dicks. I think we should do what we always do and pivot to a verbal game.
Most definitely. Cue the vibraphone. All right, so tonight's verbal game, we're going to revisit a game that I'm going to, from now on, call Spouse or Me.
Okay. Open to this title. Tell me more.
I think the only time we've ever played this was during the Plague Doctors episode during Spooktober. But the rules are basically, I'm going to describe like a really vague, broad brush, like, kind of person.
Okay.
And you're going to decide if you would rather you be that kind of person or if you would rather have your spouse be that kind of person.
I think we did this on the Plague Doctors episode.
Yes.
Got it. We were like, are you going to marry someone who won't stop dressing like a plague doctor, or are you going to not stop dressing like a plague doctor? There are some other rules and stipulations.
There
are
so many rules.
Yeah, there were a lot of rules.
Because you kept trying to find loopholes. Okay, enough. Just go listen.
Listen,
to
I'm good at these games. Carry on.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the easier one, I feel like, because the second one I think is a little more interesting. But just to start us off, spouse or me, would you rather be married to or be the kind of person who blames all failure on others, has no ability to take responsibility?
Oh, fuck. I mean, I hate this person.
I hate this. Yeah.
To be married to them sounds like, I mean, literal hell.
Actually, hell. Everything is your fault constantly.
But I'm like, everyone would hate me.
I know. To loathe or be loathed, you know?
I think I'm going to loathe and I'm going to marry this person because I already am so insecure about whether or not people like me.
Me too. I would, yeah, I think I would much rather... not, and I don't want to have that blindness.
I don't want to live life like that.
Yeah,
it is a blindness.
Okay, so second question, two of two. This is the last one.
Okay.
Spouse or me?
Okay.
A person who lies about what the desired outcome was to make every fuck up look intentional.
Either I'm going to do that or my spouse is going to do that.
And think on this one about how much that would affect the trajectory of your life. If, like, everything that went wrong, every work thing, every failed interview, like, either you or your spouse, like, pretended like that was what was on purpose to save face.
Oh, this is tough. Like, okay, because part of me is like, well,
to make it look like you always got what you wanted. But, sorry, go.
Are they good at this? Like, do people believe them? Or is it one of those people who are like, kind of like when kids are like, oh, I meant to do that. And you're like, you sure as fuck didn't.
I think it's probably some hybrid of I meant to do that and convincing. Probably some of the time it's convincing. But some of the time it's surely you can't win them all. It's I meant to do that.
Oh. This is really tough because this is also incredibly undesirable.
So undesirable.
Can I say, though, I think, like, again, I feel like I'm just inclined to say, well, I would marry that, even though that also, again, sounds like hell. Also, I think about, like, again, like you said, the trajectory of our life. I'm
exactly
going to, like, fuck up some things in, like, our life and be like, oh, that was totally, like, a plan I hadn't let you in on, and I was just trying to, like, what the fuck?
Exactly, a plan I hadn't let you in on.
Like, that sounds like hell, but also, like, to me... the choices in both of these games almost feel like, do you want to hate yourself or hate your partner? And I'm like, listen, born alone, die alone. I don't want to hate myself. So,
yeah. Yep.
I think I would marry it. What would you do?
I think I would marry it, too, because I think I'd rather be embarrassed for someone else and feel like I was in charge of my own life rather than... be like so embarrassed myself that like I couldn't like ever have like goals that I achieved or like failures that I admitted to.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And it would be really hard to be with someone like that, but like it would be more tolerable than like having that inside of me, I feel like.
Well, sure. I mean, because both of them feel very dishonest.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing you said about the spouse having like a plan they hadn't let you in on. Like, they didn't even have a plan they let you in on. They lied about lying through omission just to save face on the outcome is the situation that you created.
This is hard, though. Because being lied to by partners is like a real trigger for me.
That fucking suck.
Oh, man.
Right. So there's then that.
We'd be in couples counseling so hard. We'd be going like 3 times a week. I mean.
And you know what he would say to you? He would say, I've just been doing this so that we could go, so that you would say yes to going to couples counseling.
Oh, my God. Fuck, I hate him. Because and I'm married to him.
I knew we needed to go to couples counseling.
Oh, my God.
I hate it.
I hate it so much. But I guess, but I've married this person. So, like, everything else about them is fucking the tits. Like, they're great, except this one terrible flaw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll try and be like, okay, you have other than there has to be, like, other really good stuff going on. But these two things that you've presented are, like, pretty serious character flaws. It's not like a, oh, this person's never on time. That's annoying. Like, and
no,
that is annoying. But like, if that's your biggest problem, like, comme ci, comme ça, nobody's perfect. Fuck.
This makes me worry about other areas of dishonesty.
I mean, oh, God. But we're saying in this situation, like, everything else about them is great, but this, right?
Yeah, you would choose everything else about them as you would choose a partner.
Okay. Then I think I give them this trash quality, and I keep my own trash qualities, but I don't upgrade to this one.
All right, so we both choose spouse in both cases.
Yeah, we'd rather fuck over our partners or ourselves through another than be the problem.
Yeah. Ooh. I would rather not be the problem. That's what we're, and not to get too far away from this, the discussion of just, you know, being embarrassed to try and fail.
Well.
But I am truly embarrassed to be the problem. Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to be the problem, but I do understand, and I certainly have done things where I've tried to be like, oh, yeah, like, I wasn't, I meant to, I've done that. Who hasn't done that?
Oh, yeah, especially if you didn't have, like, a real clear plan in the first place.
Yeah, like, you weren't even sure what you wanted the outcome to be, but then something tragic happened, and then you were like, yeah, I meant to do this.
I meant to. Well.
Who hasn't? So, I don't know. We've
hopefully no one. And if you say that you haven't, then you're lying. And I don't want to work with you.
We certainly don't want to marry you.
No.
Well, on that note of getting back on horses, and I don't know, I hope if you're listening to this, you get on a horse or two this week. You can let us know about all the horses and all the things. The King's Men and couldn't put Humpty to Dumpty together again. On the internet, as usual, via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, via Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, or on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And let us know your thoughts on Fear of Failure.
Yeah, let us know, and also be on the lookout for Austin's never released album art on Instagram.
I was once recording a pop album that was
she was too embarrassed to release it.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll show you the art this week. Anyway, good morning, good night, rate and review day. We would love it forever.
Oh, we
goodbye.
Would love it.
That's bye. Awesome. Bye. You and you were like, oh, we would love it.